Hey everyone, welcome to a new episode in the Music Attic podcast, of course, with myself, Tom McDonough, and my co-host,
Mark Taylor.
Yeah, I'm going to confuse you one day and flip it and then say your name again for you.
And I'm going to say, that's not me.
That's not me, no. Yes, I know it's been a minute since we've actually had a new episode, but we'll have a bunch in a row here. You know, I have to say that music-wise, obviously things are starting back up with the new year in the first quarter. You know, we're pumping out more stuff at Music Attic. We obviously got some new partnerships, you know, with Songdo in India. Obviously, we're still our thing with Reverb Nation. So you're going to see some international artists coming on board on some of these interviews and some of our features, as well as many of the other stuff that we do along the way. Obviously, the digital radio tracker, DRT charts, we've always been very close with ever since, heck, my back end going to WRM radio when I originally first started out and some things. And then RL Recordings had a lot of artists on DRTs. And of course, MI5 has had a bunch of them. And, you know, we like building partnerships, and we'll have more this year. And I'm really happy about our, you know, where we're at in the first quarter. And podcast wise, yeah, hopefully we'll have like six new episodes for you here, almost on top of each other.
Yeah.
Maybe more.
It's been busy.
Yes. Yes, it has. And, you know, and our guest this episode is the Eiffels. I've known them a long time. You know, they kind of got a modern 80s synth pop, and they're more pop rock. My favorite genre of music is definitely pop rock.
Yeah, I love it, man. It takes me back to, you know, my high school days. I'm not trying to say they sound like an old band. It's definitely a new spin on it, but it's just, it takes me back. I love the sound.
Yes, and I, you know, I loved a lot of the 80s music. Yeah, going back to our high school years, you know, INXS, Cure, Duran Duran, you know, Def Leppard, Guns N' Roses.
Man, there were so many bands then, man.
New Edition.
Oh, come on, man. You know, they're up for the Hall of Fame this year.
Yeah, great, great. They were great. Obviously, of course, you know, Nucleus. There's so many great things that came out of the 80s that I could go on Cyndi Lauper.
Yeah.
You can name it. There's a million things. Of course, the Scandal, Patti Smyth and Scandal. We had a lot. There's a lot of great stuff that the 80s brought in music wise. But the Eiffels,
but just love that era. And this band reminds us of that era.
Yeah.
They do it their own way, but it reminds us of that era.
And they did it with a modern spin. So it definitely has and they do a lot of stage shows. They're really good at their stage shows. They do a lot of touring. So, you know, kudos to them. And yes, it'll be a great, great interview. I am sorry this one took so long to get out because I wanted to get this out earlier, but fortunately many things happen at once. But we look for a lot of good things coming for this year and going forward. Other than that, we know obviously we have our many other things that are going on. I know we've got political awareness. You know, we've been dabbling in the stuff into WXAI radio. Now we've been doing a lot of little different things that are, you know, bringing a lot of unique stuff to the table in 2026.
Yeah. I think WXAI is going to really make a comeback. There's a lot of things going on there. And then, of course, Music Attic's still going strong, man. I'm thankful for all the people that have been watching and tuning in and checking out the newsletter. Thank you, guys. We keep the content coming, and we're so thankful that you guys appreciate.
And I saw AI did a huge write-up on us. I went and Googled Music Attic reviews, and AI had a massive write-up on it on Google. I was like, wow, that's pretty cool. Out of the rest of our ones, they don't have as much as Music Attic has, because Music Attic's been around a very long time. So yes. Great to see that blossom the way it has. You know, looking for summer, and fall. I'm hoping to bring some more. Obviously, a whole bunch of new artists come back on board with the podcast, and we'll throw a few veterans in the middle. And 2026 will have some interesting stuff. I really was hoping to get more going early on, and last month, but it just didn't work out in our cards the way business was going, and of course, personal life happens.
Yes, it does.
Yes, and I'm still at my. And no one probably knows this, but we'll just say my house flooded. So it did, and
It
it's still a shambles. And we're almost 3 months into this. Yeah, yippee!
it's crazy, man. But, still, we've been getting it in and getting the work done, and it's just tough getting the podcasts and up, but we've got a lot of things in the can, and once they start coming out, they'll be coming out regularly.
Exactly. So, more power to the world. We'll make this one quick, simple, and straight to the interview. So,
Perfect.
my favorite thing of the favorite time is to say, on to our interview.
See you on the other side.
Hey, everyone, I want to welcome our next guest, Sean from the Eiffels. Now, I always liked it because you gave me an easy name to do well. Two easy names to pronounce, because normally it's very difficult on some of them. So I appreciate the easy ones all the time. Welcome to our show. It is great to have you.
Thank you, Tom. Thank you, Marcus. And
I'm
yeah,
glad
you'd be
to have you.
surprised. Me and my wife laugh about it. You'd think Sean would be easy and pretty common, but to this day, I still get, the Uber driver or the clerk at the office saying, "Is seen is seen here?"
Seen,
So
I've seen you.
so the spe that Irish spelling S-E-A-N still gets the seen,
Still gets people, yes.
and the Eiffels, I still get. Some people can't read it sometimes, and there's like a lot of tall letters in there, so it's like EIFFEL, so
Yes. Well,
sometimes
how do
people
they
get that wrong too.
mispronounce Eiffel?
Eiffels, Eiffel, I'll just get Eiffel,
It's so I got to ask. Why the Eiffels? I mean, what was the story behind the name?
I guess a quick story is I was working in a recording studio in Hollywood, and I was writing and starting to record what I knew would be my big project, the band. And so every day I was starting to collect ideas for band names. And if you ever want to feel unoriginal, just look up a band name that you think is original, and you'll find 20 of them that already exist.
Sure.
So I had like a notepad on my phone of hundreds of names that I thought were cool, and all of them seemed to be taken in some way or another. And then I thought it was a cool name just because it sounded big. References something monumental, like a landmark, something grand, a big piece of art or work that's recognizable, kind of a world site. So I loved that connection, and then I looked it up, and it wasn't taken. And out and a few guys that we were recording in the studio loved the name. My then girlfriend, now wife, loved the name, and so I checked out like some of the social handles, and they weren't taken, and I was like, I'm taking it. Because it was like after not having, I was like, I went through that process like 20 times already of finding a name that I thought was cool, and then I'd look it up and it'd be taken. So at that point I was like, that's it,
I don't blame you. It's tough coming up with names because you're right. Every time you start looking, you think it's really cool, and then you look it up and someone's already got it. Happens all the time.
I mean, I bet Music Addict, I bet someone had that as a website or something even before you guys, because that's a great name.
We got lucky. No one did.
Well, there you go.
We got lucky on that, and it was hard. The only person that had that name was the people trying to sell the .com, and
there's some
they were
just
trying to
the
sell it. It's like
scalpers.
going for like 200 and some odd thousand dollars right now.
Oh, okay. So
Something
they're
astronomically outrageous. And yeah, we got lucky that that worked out, and of course the logo looks so cool.
Oh,
So
yeah.
I
It's a
can't
great
we
name.
can't
Jumped
argue with the
on
logo.
it. Yeah, I think we talked about it. We looked and we jumped on it same day.
I remember just a random memory, and this is a dated reference, but do you remember when the Daily Show first came out and the host was actually Craig Kilborn, I think his name was.
Yeah.
I think he had Kid Rock on, and he was like, I'm surprised that name wasn't taken already.
I know, exactly.
Generic name, you know, but I mean, well, another thing we talked about and laughed about in the studio was, it was like, whoever gets big with the name first wins, you know what I mean? Yep. Like, you could have that name, but if no one knows who you are and they know this, whoever else had it, luckily I didn't have that issue, but that's also true.
I know Kid Rock, I knew, so going back in time, since I'm originally from Detroit, so I remember him playing the west side, the east side. So it was Hayloft East and Hayloft West was the name of the two places. And I remember seeing him before he ever was famous.
How was that like?
Yeah, it was different, a lot different sound. But yeah, it was a completely different person in music wise. And it was funny because I remember him all the time because it was a Thursday play all the time. And I was like, wow, this is kind of interesting. Then he all of a sudden, you know, made it and blew up. And I'm like, oh, I remember him.
He was more rooted in hip hop back then. Yeah. Because that was kind of like his roots. Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Exactly.
So did you see him? Was he rapping or was he DJing or?
No, it was more kind of like
what he was doing.
Yeah, kind of
like the rap rock thing.
Rapping. Yeah, if you want to call it that. It was more the thing from Eminem coming out and doing that into that genre in Detroit and changing Detroit in a lot of different ways. You know, then they started playing more music and it sounded more a little bit more country in some ways for a while there. But yeah, he definitely, his sound changed over time. And you know what? He was always a nice guy. Even when he was a nobody, he was still nice.
Good. Yeah, that's good to hear. Yeah, I mean, he's getting a little bit more into that country thing again, I think, nowadays, too. So I guess it was he can say he was always kind of doing that.
Exactly. So let's talk about your music. You guys have some, quite a few, actual, you have, what, three current songs that are out and about? You had one. Yeah, go ahead. Go for it.
Yeah, our three newest releases. Newest one is Beautiful Life. Just put out a music video for that. And before that was Blink and On a Roll. So those are the new releases.
I like the titles. Simple.
Thanks.
Memorable.
Yeah.
Now, you got, you're from San Diego originally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Funny, when I did music, I was actually got discovered in San Diego at a place that had, we played in front of 20 people and we actually ended up making it and becoming something. But it's funny that San Diego really was not, even back in 1994, was a very quiet town for music, but it is actually, I have to say, because I lived in the town for a while, it is a beautiful town and people just underrate it because LA and, you know, Hollywood really dominate everything else and everything north, but San Diego seems to be left out of it. I've always loved San Diego.
I love San Diego.
Yeah, I would move back in a heartbeat because it was so beautiful. You know, it's just like in Michigan, you got if you go out far enough from the city, you're going to run into horse farms. And, you know, there's a lot of different things that San Diego has to offer.
And the food is fabulous.
Fabulous.
Yes, we got that Mexican food. Hard to beat the Mexican food. And I
best
think
I ever had.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of like the pride and joy of San Diego. They'll say, you know, we got the best Mexican food. And I think it's kind of went at least popular in the whole state, maybe even nationally. But I think we invented what's called the California burrito or the carne asada fries, which is basically mixing French fries with the carne asada, which is just so good. Great, you know, after party food or, you know, whatever.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah, it always had great food there. So, and it was a joy. So it's great to see that somebody else coming out of San Diego and having some, you know, power in the music, because again, most towns, a lot of towns get wavered away because people end up drifting into the bigger towns and then they say they're from there and that's how they make it. So it's always nice to see when people keep their roots, and especially in the, I mean, San Diego is not a small town, but compared to LA, anything's, I guess, small.
Yeah, and I love LA. I lived there for a decade, moved back to San Diego a few years ago, and had a blast in LA. But it was an easy move because family's here and was, you know, getting ready to get married and you know, have kids. And I think San Diego is a little nicer for that. And, you know, being close to family, if you're going to do that, is a little nicer. And yeah, I agree. San Diego, it's hard to beat. And it's a nice sentiment. You do hear that from, you know, people from all around the country. So it's great to be back. It is a beautiful town. As far as it being a little smaller and less known, that is true. But I think as of late, it's the population is really going up. And I think there's been a lot of movement in California. And I think I've been seeing lists that San Diego is one of the least affordable cities like in the country now. So it's
really nice.
Yeah, you do pay for the cost of living now.
Yeah, this is true. So how would you describe your music? If you had someone asked you about it, how would you describe your music?
The easy, quick answer I've started saying a lot is just, you know, it's dancey rock music. I love rock music. I also love, you know, music that makes you want to dance. I grew up listening to punk, so I think some of that simplicity and energy is also in there. I've been told a lot that there's an 80s influence in there. I think that's likely because the synths that are present in a lot of the songs, and maybe just the fact that, you know, I grew up, you know, 80s, 90s, and maybe that's, you know, instilled in me as I was growing up. So I think you'll see all those influences in there too, but I also love classic rock. But short answer, dancey, fun rock music.
I would almost say it's like a modern version of the early 2000s of a lot of the alternative, you know, rock that was in there. It really does have, you're right, you do pull some of the 80s sound into it. But I think it also falls into more where you guys would really kind of categorize to where you got that, you know, clicky, poppy rock type of sound that the early 2000s had, and as you know, kept in, and now it's merged into the, you know, 2020s. We've had a lot of that coming back out, you know, how everything seems to drift in time and then come back out as a sound, but it's a much more modern type sound to it. And it's very catchy.
Yeah, fun and energetic.
Energetic and catchy.
You know, I really enjoyed listening, man. You guys do bring a lot of energy. I've never gotten to see you guys perform live. Are you more of a studio guy or a live guy?
I love elements of both. You know, I love recording and having fun, writing music and experimenting in the studio. But we do play a lot. We've toured almost the whole country. We kind of left off when we did the national tour. We kind of left off the East Coast, but so we kind of did the whole you know, circle through the U.S. Down into Texas and then up through kind of Chicago. I guess would kind of be as far east as we went and then made our way back. And then, you know, all the other shows besides that tour as well. But yeah, it's totally different. And, I think, I strive to continue to grow in both those areas, cause I love both of them in different ways. But yeah, it's interesting that you say early 2000s, cause I think there was also just bands in that early 2000 era that had those same influences, you know what I mean? Like the Killers, like you saw that, and the Strokes, you saw that kind of resurgence of the classic rock and the 80s rock kind of coming back at that point. And I loved that era. I feel like that was like a second high point for rock was those early 2000s, you know. One of my favorite bands, Queens of the Stone Age. They had a probably one of my favorite albums of all time, Songs for the Deaf, coming out right around then also.
Yeah, and it's funny you mentioned the Killers. I would have definitely said that there's a very big connection between what you guys do and what they've done. There is not in a complete sense, but in a lot of ways, how the Killers had that catchy, rocky, dancey type song that people could remember and was easy memorable. That was one of the things they did extremely well. Either you loved it or you hated it. There was never any in between with them.
Yeah, I love them now, but I remember when they first dropped that first single. I think I was still more in like a hard rock mindset at that point, and they had that. What was the name of the song? Was it "You Got a Boyfriend Looks Like a Girlfriend"? That song. Yeah, That was like their first big single that I remember. And I remember I didn't hate it, but I just, it wasn't really something that I gravitated towards. But then I remember, I think when they came out with When You Were Young.
Yeah, When You Were Young.
I just loved that song. And then ever since then, I've just listened to them more and more. And I really love them. I think they're one of the best, best bands that are, you know, still active. And I think, it's crazy. I've been every year. I see that Mr. Brightside is still on Britain's like top Billboard chart, whatever their equivalent of the Billboard is. It's still on there.
They play it all the time there. Yeah, it's amazing how that survived for so long. They've done really well with that song. Same thing. I would also say I hear some elements of going back, you know, fastball. A bit into your music. If you go back, that's going to the 90s, going to the 80s. You know, it's tougher to nail down the 80s because the music, if you listen to was Mark and me growing up in the 80s, listening to the music then seemed fast. And now listening to it now, it seems like I have to get out and push. Get out and push. I mean, there's a lot of great, I mean, there's some really good songs in the 80s, don't get me wrong. But it's it's didn't have the feel until like mid 90s did we have a feel where it picked up. And then we had a lot much harder. I mean, even with the, you know, the hair bands didn't really have it. It was just starting. Then all of a sudden we got into that poppy rock sound that we have that is culminated till today. And I think maybe Queen maybe started it. And then it took a while just to catch back up. But it was a very different time and different sound in the 80s. But you're right. I can hear the synth in it. But it's just, I don't know if I could compare anything else to it because it just isn't fast and dancey enough in my to want me to say, yeah, that sounds like that, because I can hear a lot of bands that I've heard played with, you know, over the years that I can hear it in what you guys are doing completely. I mean, I can see you guys doing really good at festivals, really good events.
What is that? The track Blink? That's a festival song if I ever heard one, man.
By far. Oh,
thank you. Yeah, and that's probably the fastest song, speaking of speed, on our live set right now. It was funny, we were just talking about that at rehearsal a couple weeks ago because we were getting ready for this show we just played at House of Blues last week, and we were opening with that at a kind of a music fest that we played last year, which was a Hollister Feel Good Fest.
Yep.
Because it was just a great fast song to open with. And so we moved it though for this most recent show to like second or third or something. But it was funny because when you play a song and then you go into that song, you really have to like pick up the pace. because when you open with it, then it's then everything's easy after it. But when you don't open with it and then you jump into that pace, you got to be ready for it. So
the drummer hates you.
But growing up in the 90s with that 90s punk rock, which definitely sped up, which I think about a lot. It's funny how 90s punk rock just had that like that drum beat that was just ridiculous and fast. And that's what I grew up with. And I've always just liked energetic music. Like I'll hear clips of slow music and I'll be like, oh, it's so beautiful. And I'll add it to my playlist. And then when I'm driving in the car and that song comes on, I'll just eventually be like, next, you know. Like it's the waning attention span of our generation, I guess. But also, I just like to, you know, I guess that's part of why I love music, is to get my energy up.
Yeah, I think music should be that. I mean, it brings out every emotion. You can you can go from one end of the spectrum to the other in just your playlist. But again, we also live daily in our moods, and our moods change with music, and music can put us in a mood or take us out of a mood, I suppose.
That
is one thing that's so powerful about music, that people seem to, you know, escape from the fact that it can impact your day in so many positive ways, or I guess in negative ways. I mean, I got my I hate everyone's playlist, and I, you know, my your love songs and your sad songs and the different things. It depends on really where you're at in those in your given day, in your mood. But ultimately, I also like mixing it up, which of course you get yourself doing.
And don't get me wrong, I love a beautiful slow song now and then, or, you know, a cool you know, moody, slow song now and then, just a lot less frequently.
Now, yeah. Mark, you can testify, I've been quoting Queen like left and right the last, what, week?
I love Queen.
I've just been quoting it left and right, and I'm notorious for this, where I quote song lyrics all the time, and I'll just pump it out, and usually it's just what my mood is in and generally why I do it. And but it is funny how I cannot, if it's too dead silent in a room, I can't function. I can't do it. But if I had music in the background, I can, you know, build a castle. But I cannot do it if I don't have any music. So I fail at that. So I, you know, job wise, people would, I don't, most people would probably struggle with that in any normal job, because most of them you're not allowed to, and that would be tragic in my case. I would not do well.
I don't know if you have it yet. But if you don't, you should get one. My wife bought me a shower speaker last year. And it's just like a little JBL shower speaker. It's like water resistant. We just put it on a hook in the shower. And it's so great. Because that's one of those times when you are, you're left alone with your thoughts. Now it's just a party every time I take a shower, you know what I mean? Just crank it up. And
I'm left alone with my thoughts a lot in the shower. It's bad. Yeah,
I know. Bill Burr has a great bit about it. He's like, you're taking a shower and then you just remember something from high school and you just yell and your wife goes, what's wrong? And you go, oh, nothing. I just, you know, stubbed my toe. And she's like, again, you know, or something like that. I'm butchering the joke, but it's, I think a lot of people have that. So it's nice to just kind of instead make it a party in there. So we like it so much that she uses it all the time now. And we actually bought one for the other shower too. So it just, you know, you got your phone there and it just Bluetooth connects. And
So you did play at the House of Blues recently.
Yes.
Uh-huh. House of Blues is an amazing place to play.
It really was.
I love acoustics. Playing the House of Blues.
Yeah.
Now, what city? San Diego?
Yeah, San Diego. And yeah, it was really great. The staff there was really great. The production team, everything was the lights, everything was great. The service there was great. So if you're an artist and you are touring San Diego, that is a great venue. I'll give them my personal recommendation. The show in San Diego prior to that also that I would say was really great was Music Box, another great newer venue in San Diego. And they just were so great. And they were just explaining to me that they really like just having everything kind of turnkey, like they had amps and a drum kit and everything there for us. So we really didn't have to bring that much. So some great venues in San Diego, and thankfully they were a pleasure to do the show with. Cool. I was just talking about Los Angeles used to have a great House of Blues in Hollywood also. It was kind of a legendary venue, and it closed, I think, just recently, maybe around COVID, during COVID.
Yeah, last 2 or 3 years, yeah.
Yeah. So that's sad. Hopefully they reopen that. I heard that they were doing that, but it's, you know, like how can Los Angeles not have a House of Blues? You know?
It's shocking, but I guess like every other venue, everybody took a hit during COVID and then after. And
yeah,
business models, if you were living paycheck, month to month, you weren't going to survive.
Yeah, especially in Hollywood, those leases, I'm sure. Yeah. Astronomical
in Hollywood. Yes.
Yeah.
you're gonna get hit pretty hard with that.
yeah. Although they say the commercial real estate's getting cheaper just because of all the working from home. So hopefully that helps some of these live venues.
Hopefully it does. There's going to be some changes, I'm sure, in the next 5 years to live venues that we're used to.
Yeah. Yeah. I've been hearing a little bit about the kind of monopoly, you could argue, that Live Nation has on some of these venues. And I think I heard there was some legislation to try to loosen that grip a little bit. And I think because of that, some of these live venues are opening their doors a little bit more to independent artists and smaller artists who aren't, you know, major label signed, which may or may not have had something to do with our House of Blues show. So yeah, it's interesting.
Yes, there is. Live Nation does have a stranglehold. I mean, I'm not faulting them. Monopolies are great. If you're a
Sure.
monopoly,
If
if
you're, yeah,
yeah, if
exactly.
you're
Yeah,
the dice man,
monopolizing.
Barclays,
Right,
yeah.
right, right.
If I have
Yeah.
Boardwalk and Park Place, why would I complain? Yeah,
Yeah, of course.
yeah. So I mean, goody for them, but bad for everyone else.
Right,
But
right.
yes, I believe there's some fixes in legislation that is supposed to fix that.
Yeah, hopefully that'll be, whatever is best for the music business and artists in general, hopefully that's what happens.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, did you say your Beautiful Life video won some award or was nominated for some awards?
Yeah, so San Diego has its own award show called the San Diego Music Awards, and the Beautiful Life music video was nominated. So shout out to them and thanks for that. And they're going to have a show for that this month, so that'll be fun to go to. It's going to be at a very cool venue in San Diego called Humphreys by the Bay,
Yeah.
April 29th. I don't know if you remember that, Tom, from your
Yep, I do.
time here, but I grew up in San Diego and I had never been there until I moved back recently. And I was like, this venue is awesome. It's right on the water. And the way that for a live show, the way that the standing general area is, it's elevated, or it kind of goes at an incline. So no matter where you're standing, you have a great view of the stage. So it's a one of the coolest venues, I think, for live music.
Yeah, one of the most underrated in San Diego. Yeah, right. Because
Yeah.
not one you first this, when you start naming off tops, it's not the top of the list. But I agree that I remember the elevation is awesome in that.
Yeah. The only thing I did notice when I went to the last show there, it seemed like it could have been a little louder, and I'm wondering if that's because of it being on the water or
Yeah.
its particular placement, real estate wise, if maybe they have a sound cap, a volume cap, but it might have just been the sound that particular night, because the first time I went there was kind of more of a singer-songwriter type, and so it made sense. But I saw Chromeo there, and still it was a great show, but I felt like it could be a little louder for, like, a
Sure,
dancey
it's a
party band like that.
zoning. Yeah, I'm sure it's a zoning thing.
Yeah, might be.
Yes, you gotta love that. So, influences, music-wise, what has been who was your biggest influences growing up?
Like I said, I grew up listening to punk rock, and that's what got me into music to begin with. I got my first guitar and was looking up these punk rock guitar tabs, and I was like, I could do this. It's just power chords. I could figure that out. So punk rock was a really easy way for me to think that music was achievable and accessible. And then just also happened to be what I thought was the coolest thing at that point in time. I still think punk rock is, it's still,
It's so
still
cool.
probably the coolest thing. But so those were my early influences, were kind of those 90s punk bands, 80s punk bands, and then even, and then going back eventually to those initial punk bands from the late 70s. And then from punk rock, got more into classic rock, and then I think it kind of the music kept evolving for me, because I kept wanting to make it my I was finding that my favorite parts of the song were the so parts of the song where, even in those 90s punk songs, you'd have that really fast rhythm, and then all of a sudden they'd go into a more kind of groovy beat, and that would be like my favorite part of the song. So those more danceable parts of the song, or kind of parts of the song that really make you move, were my favorite parts. So that was kind of my evolution of taste, but and also my musical output was, I was playing punk, and then it was rock and roll, and then it was like, let's make this even more dancey, let's make this more fun to move to. So, and then everything, all the influences that come with that, once you are going in that direction, whether it be because you wanted to or because you were listening to those influences. But I do find that my favorite type of music that I'll be listening to is the type of music that I'm aspiring to. So getting back to classic rock, and then just finding cool. I think the 80s was cool too, because of just, you could tell they were experimenting with all the new stuff. I
Yeah.
feel like that's what it was. It was like,
Technology was a big thing then.
right, it like 70s seemed like peak rock and roll, like they perfected the rock and roll, and then new technology was in the 80s, so they're like, let's find all the cool ways to mess with these toys. And I feel like there was kind of a second resurgence of that playing with like electronic tools in the aughts, that's what you call it, kind of the 2008, you know, yeah, with MGMT and where and the Yeah Yeah Yeahs, where you saw them, they were kind of like, I once saw a headline that said something like rock is going through an identity crisis right now, because it's they kind of wanted to be club. I feel like clubbing was so big at that moment that everyone wanted to be affiliated with that. You know, I want to play rock and roll, but I also want to be at the party. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I feel like I still feel that way. You know, it's like I want to play rock, but I also want to be at the party. I want it to be a party, you know?
I think arenas, so back before that, arenas were the big thing and everyone would be at arena. Then I write about 2007, 2008. Then all of a sudden, you're right, it turned more clubbing. All of a sudden, the arena was like, yeah, we don't want that anymore. So you didn't want any rock anthems like that. And you're right.
They tried
being the life of the party at that point. And that is where rock and roll switched. And now we have a different change in rock and roll. And I think, and again, I think that wasn't all the fault of rock and roll. I mean, country changed and started. Mm-hmm. Okay, you went from country to this modern sound of country, which is much more poppy, and pop changed in a direction. So I think everything all of a sudden just did this turn, and then we went in a different direction. And I think the rock and roll all of a sudden is now making that turn back that way. It to where it was, because you hear a lot more of that coming back, a lot of that sound coming back than it was in more of the clubbing. I think it is eventually going to rock and roll return. I just don't know what they'll call it. They'll call it rock.
Yeah.
Will they change the name? I mean, disco was only there for a few seconds and that changed. So.
Yeah. Since the kind of 2010 on, I feel like it's hard to pinpoint down eras now, just because the internet and everything's just, you have access to everything all at once now, and everyone can kind of just go off into their segment. And there's no prevailing cultural norm like there was when MTV was ruling, and they were just kind of like, this is what's in now. You know, it's like trends used to seem, they'd last a decade or 5 to 10 years. And now it's just like, whatever it is that month or that week.
Yeah.
When you say classic rock, what era are you thinking of when you say classic rock?
70s, mostly for the rock and roll stuff. But I my dad, it was a big Beatles fan, British Invasion fan. So I love all that stuff, too, because thankfully he blessed my ears with that early on. And now it's all intertwined with my nostalgia. So I love all that stuff as well. A lot of British rock, but even the American stuff, too, like, you know, Hendrix and all that stuff. I think rock was perfected in the 70s, and everything else from there on out is just kind of experimenting with that perfection, you know, just like I think rap was probably perfected in the 90s, maybe early 90s, and everything past that is just like tweaking it and trying different things. And it'll be interesting to see what the new thing is, you know. I feel like there hasn't been, I feel like EDM had, you know, it's new dubstep and trap era for a while, but I don't know, has there been a big new musical genre drop in the past 5-10 years?
No, and that's what I'm saying. What's next?
I was talking to a kid the other day, and he said classic rock. I'm like who? He said like Nirvana. I'm like,
yeah, I know.
Wow. Wild, okay.
Dude. Yeah. You
know, the that really made me feel old. Yeah.
I know, and it's wild to, and I've heard this the past several years now. Is like Nirvana, if you grew up in the 80s or the 90s, you think. Permanently, I think that 30 years ago equals the 70s, you know what I mean? So Zeppelin. So right now, Nirvana is the Zeppelin to this generation. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, that is very true, because they're that's what they're stuck on. But again, we weren't, when we were going up, Elvis was way too much out of our figure of thinking of it is. And you're right, we're going back. It would have been more in the 80s. We were trying not to go back that far. I think the Beatles, as far as I think I ever thought of going back into music originally when I was a kid, because we were listening to that early stuff
Yeah, in the '80s, right. We had AC/DC. We had there was just
yeah, Survivor. So much. Survivor was minor stuff. AC/DC. Then you go all the way to the Cure, to you know, to Def Leppard, to
Hair Bands,
Roses. Yeah, and then Bon Jovi. I mean,
Bon Jovi. We had a lot of hair different bands, stuff, man. Yeah, so it was just we had a lot of rock because we've just come through the whole Led Zeppelin and all of those guys. Then in the 80s, we had. So when I think classic rock, it's different than I would have never said Nirvana. So that's why I was
right, asking. Of course. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's interesting because that's even reflected. Well, I don't know. I don't listen to the radio nearly as much as I used to. But I feel like if you're listening to classic rock, they might throw out Nirvana in there nowadays, but mostly classic rock feels like it still means what it used to. And it's like, I know at least in San Diego, the alternative stations, for better or for worse, still play that alternative music from the time. You know, it's like they play some new music, but a lot of it is still that era, because I think they're holding on to that same audience. So that's it's interesting.
Interesting.
So like the Stone Temple Pilots era.
STP.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, time is funny. It doesn't seem like it was that long ago, but like you said, you know, 30 years ago, you know, when the movie The Crow was out, it was 30 years ago.
I know. It's insane. You mentioned our new songs. That's what Blink is about. It's about how life goes by in a blink. So
I dig that song too, man. That's my tempo there, man. I dig that song.
Thank you. Yeah, it's a fast one. It's a fun one to play.
So if you could take a pick of anybody dead or alive that you could play with, who would it be?
Oh, dead or alive really widens it.
Yes, it does.
I know at least living, my favorite band for a long, long time has been the Queens of the Stone Age. And I know we don't necessarily sound like them, but Josh Homme would be definitely up there on the list. I had the pleasure of actually meeting and chatting with Dave Grohl once, and he was the nicest guy. And of course, he's another living legend who's worked with Queens, and of course, all of the, you're speaking of Nirvana and the Foo Fighters, of course, and other projects that he's done. So he's another great. So those are some living. And then I think more so that living or dead, I would more like to contextualize it as like in their prime, you know what I mean? Yes. Right, you know, cause I feel like certain bands are still here, but they aren't what they were as far as, you know, of the context of, you know, the time being. So maybe back then too, of course, the Beatles and the Rolling Stones. I do love some of the guys you just mentioned too. I think Guns N' Roses is probably the best hard rock band ever. So that'd be cool to work with them in their day. So those are just a few off the top of my head.
Yeah, they're all great, great picks, great people to play with. You can't go wrong with any of them.
Yeah.
Side bin, and I normally don't ask this question normally, but in your songwriting, and I've only done this once or twice, but in your songwriting, do you start with the lyrics or do you start with the melody?
I don't mind that question. I get that question a lot. I usually, what I have found is, and it's not always exactly the same, but I like to, mostly I like to start with the music. So I'll usually start with doing the beat first, you know?
That's what sane people do, Sean.
Right, yeah.
Wow.
But I'll tell you.
But, do you want this knife back?
but what I do though is oftentimes I'll have lyrics that I'm writing down, you know what I mean? Just randomly. And then I'll find a way to make them work with, and that usually involves changing them in certain ways with the music. But one of the rationales behind that is I find that if I start, for example, with the guitar, then I'll try to make, I try to make the guitar the backbone of the song. So it becomes a lot more just rhythm based, you know what I mean? But if I start with the drums and the bass, then I can just kind of sprinkle the guitar and make it a little bit more creative as far as a lead part. And then, and then I can come in with the vocal and just add what's needed with the vocal and make the vocal really complement the music and vice versa. So that's been my rationale for why I do it that way, but it'd probably be good to mix it up more.
Yeah, Tom starts with the lyrics.
I start with the lyrics.
You often start with the bridge.
I start with the bridge, go to the hook and bridge, and then I build around them, and then I'll go get
How do you start with the bridge? I'm always saying, how do you start with the bridge?
Yeah.
You start with the lyric bridge, and the bridge.
Okay, I'll say this 100%. Every memorable historical song that stands the testament of time and continues on to today all has memorable bridges. For a reason.
I doubt they started with the bridge.
Yeah. you know why it's probably a good idea? Because I think if you get the verses and the chorus, especially the chorus down, then probably with a lot of people, and I may be guilty of this, the bridge becomes the afterthought. Like, all right, now we got to do the bridge. You know what I mean? And then it suffers from
the bridge suffers from the fact about.
Right.
You poured all that creativity and the rest of it.
Right.
So usually I start with the bridge and the hook. I'll get the hook, just the beginning of it, the catchy part. Then I build my bridge really quick. So I know the process, what my song is going to be about. Then I build that bridge and then I go back. And I can tell you what, I've been very successful at that for quite a long time. I'm pumping out hits. Lately it's been country songs, but you know, I'm getting old.
I recently heard just on a social media clip, it might have been Max Martin or another one of those just really successful pop producers, but he was saying that you make a chorus and then you make the chorus the verse.
Yeah.
And then you make another chorus and you make that the bridge, and then you make the pre-chorus, or you make another chorus and you make that the pre-chorus. And he's like, and then you got like a song just full of choruses. And I haven't really tried that approach yet, but it sounds like a good formula for really catchy music.
It's really catchy music, but the problem with that formula, in my opinion, is the same thing as you hear, you know, all those songs you hear in car commercials.
Yeah, exactly.
Boom.
Right.
It's here. It's gone. It's a summer song. Right. It's gone. You never hear it again. Right. And this is what happens to a lot of songs. Like, I mean, think Katy Perry and, you know, Hot and Cold. Here and gone. And no one really remembers it too much from that point. Or I Kissed a Girl and I Liked It. And those were quick, catchy, pretty much same structured songs. And they're gone. And they don't last memorably because they're great instant hits where people can remember them. But after a while, you know, when you listen to a song so many times, you can't stand it after a while. And that's what the mentality level of that happens is that people start getting to the point where they don't like a song, and then it just gets pushed, you know, off to the side. And they only go back to it whenever they need. But the memorable songs are the ones that really hit to the core, usually core feelings. And sometimes those catchy chorus songs don't have that because they're trying to catch the excitement of the moment or whatever's in time. And again, like I said, catchy car, or, you know, car songs you see in all car ads or truck ads. They're very quick to the point and catchy, but then they kind of don't have any substance, in my opinion. So, but I get it. They are great to a songs, right?
I was about to echo that, Marcus. I was going to say, speak for yourself, Tom. I love me some bubblegum pop, Katy Perry.
Yeah, I know. I mean, don't get me wrong. I like bubblegum pop.
And the fact that you mentioned her references her memorability, her memorableness, you know.
Yeah. I like bubblegum pop, don't get me wrong. Yeah, yeah. It's probably half my playlist daily.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But it is, at the same time, I am a rare duck on the thing of music.
When you know what you mean.
I listen to a music, and I go, really? Because I go from Five Finger Death Punch to Katy Perry to, you know, then go to Lady Gaga to somewhere to Kiss to Queen to, you know, something in the 90s. And most people don't go that, you know, up and down all day. But
Sure.
it is a rarity that you have most people usually stick into these things. And bubblegum pop really doesn't last long in general, in speaking of rankings and how long it stays in the charts. But they're great songs, but they just don't have substance that keeps them around a long time, in my opinion. I may be just the only one that thinks that, but, you know.
I don't think anybody can ride a bridge better than Tom. And I guess that's because if that's where you start, you should be really good at it.
Yes, but I've written some of the better memorable bridges in time.
Sometimes I forget, you know, you're writing and you just forget. I'll go through lately and I don't even know when I hear you hardly hear a bridge anymore. It's hook, chorus, hook, chorus, hook, hook, hook.
Yeah. You know?
Yeah. And I think that bridges can make the song more memorable. It brings everything together. It ties it all together, and then you have this, and then it goes on. But it's almost
a country song
by the way of the guitar solo. The things you just don't hear in music anymore. You don't get the guitar solo or the synth solo.
No.
They're just gone.
In a country song, the bridge brings back the girl, the truck, and the dog.
Yeah. I heard a great joke, and it was something like, why are all country songs by male musicians about, like, love, trucks, beer, prayer, and all women country singers sing about is killing their husbands?
Exactly. I don't understand it, but there is always alcohol in a male. Yeah. And I am guilty because we've been writing a lot about whiskey. And I've written a ton of songs about whiskey. And then I did sit down, and it was funny. I watched Twister 2. I sat down and wrote a song during the movie based off of one line in the song or the movie saying, "You stole my thunder."
That's a great country line. Yeah.
I wrote that song while watching the movie. And if you actually listen to the song, you will hear most of the, you'll know where the parts were in the movies where this fell, because I was writing at times trying to relate. It's funny how it kind of rolled together, but that was my background at the time I was writing. So it's kind of funny to see that you're right. There's a lot. That was probably the only one I didn't write that had some kind of alcohol in it, because you're right. I write mostly heartbreak songs. Notorious for that. You know, I've written a couple of the dance ones, but it's not been my thing. I always thought that heartbreak songs sell. People always,
especially for country in particular, I think, you know, among like R&B and that type of stuff too, and also pop ballads, but country, I love the heartbreak song.
And in rock, I've done a bunch of those, you know, a lot of different rock songs and that, and some pop songs, and it is a lot of it. The heartbreak will sell better than some of the other stuff, just because everyone goes through heartbreak. And that is one of the most intense emotional states that people drive towards music, just to feel better, I guess. So it is an easier one to sell. So, so there's off my soapbox about the songwriting.
But no, I what I would add to that is I think it really adds to the credibility and the talent of an artist if they can, if audiences have the patience to listen to those moments that are less, telegraphed to be catchy, and you're just trying to inject some real substance into it. And you're right. That's what, you know, when an artist can get an audience to listen to those parts, have the patience for it, or the interest, it definitely lends to their legacy and longevity.
And the 80s was notorious for up and down for both of that. I mean, you had Survivor with Eye of the Tiger, which was very catchy, very quick, and very, very fast paced to all choruses in a lot of ways. And then you had something that you had Bon Jovi with a lot of breakup songs and a lot of heartbreak.
Journey?
And all that. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
A Journey. Journey and Oh Sherry, you know, I mean, there was so much to that whole album. Yeah. And then the next album came, you were waiting for what happened to your relationship. See, REO Speedwagon did the same identical thing for so much time. Chicago, going back in time, you know, for us growing up in the 80s, Chicago 20 was probably the more powerful one for all of us, because that was right at the time we were hearing between Thriller in 84, which really just transform music, because it was the first thing that actually saw a live, 10, 15, 20 minute video on television that they had a special for. And of course, you know, we had MTV starting, and I stayed home from school the first day MTV actually aired just so I could watch it. Funny enough.
I remember in middle school, my parents cut off our cable for several months, and I was feeling so much FOMO that I wasn't, and it was mostly for MTV that MTV. I wasn't getting to watch MTV. I felt like out of the loop, you know?
Yeah, because you didn't get your MTV news.
Yeah, I didn't know what the cool new videos were. I used to come home and watch Yo. I think it was MTV Jams was the rap show in the early 90s. I know Yo MTV Raps, I think, was earlier. Yes. So I don't know if that was so much my generation, but MTV Jams, I remember, just I always watched. That was what I was doing instead of doing my homework for a while.
No, there's nothing wrong with that. Look where you went with it.
one other anecdote that this conversation reminded me of is I heard a comedian, I think it was Louis C.K., said that the way he strengthens his set is he finds the weakest joke and he puts it at the end. And then so it forces him to make that joke the strongest joke. And then once that becomes his closer, he goes back to the set, finds the weakest part of the set, makes that the closer, puts that at the end. And then he's forced to make that the strongest joke. And then after doing that, you know, touring around, you know, with that plan, eventually he has this just like really honed set that he can, you know, make into a special or whatever it might be. So I think that's I've been wanting to, you know, apply that to music writing as well.
Yeah, it makes it tough when you're trying to do that.
Yeah, but similar to what it's similar approach to what you're doing. You're starting with what people usually do last, so you're making that the best it can be, and then you're going to the chorus, which of course needs to be great. So it's
similar. I'm forcing myself to write better. You're right, and ultimately it forces me to write better, to make me think about it, to make me think of the moment of I'm hearing this. How can I relate to this? And that's generally what I do. And usually, you know, I've had I hate to say it, the last probably 2 or 3 weeks I've struggled with writing, which is not normal for me. I've had many years of success, but I haven't had any real hits that come out of anything I've done recently that I've written. And I'm like, I was saying this just right before the interview, actually. I was saying, I'm going, I'm really in a slump and I don't get it. But I get people go through slumps, things change, things go on. But it's just, you know, all these years I've had so much great success of 30 plus years of constantly writing hits that it's like, wow, this is what it feels like not to write. Very, very different feeling.
I heard something from the Goo Goo Dolls lead singer once about his writer's block, and he said, I always thought this was interesting, he said writer's block isn't that you can't write, it's just that you don't think that anything you're writing is good. So maybe you just need to get more stoked on what you're writing, you know?
I've hung out with them, so Johnny, Robbie, and Craig are amazing. They are a lot of fun, and Robbie knows music. He can play anything you tell him to play. And Johnny is incredibly well versed in thinking and writing wise. And they've written some of the best music. And I agree that their whole first two albums were phenomenal, to a point where I'm glad they came back with it a few years back and they did the old albums originally and did it. And I got to see that live. And Craig's really been a good friend of mine for a long time, the drummer. And it's amazing to see these guys and the way they structure and they look at music. And that's, you're right. This is the types of people you want to always surround yourself with, to talk to, because they always, you're right, try to think outside of the box, but always try to think of ways to, well, this can work, or this can work, or did you ever think of this? And they've always approached things in a very analytical way. And I think that I would love to, and I always didn't think I could write it as good as they have. And they really are good at it and have done so well over the years that I can't think of a better band other than probably, you know, going back, other than someone like Michael Jackson who had too many hits. And I can't think of too many other bands that really had dramatic success lyrics. I always listen to a song for its lyrics. Most people listen to the song for its for the melodies, and that's the reason I don't write for the music first. I write for the lyrics because that's what I listen to in a song. I take the song for its core value of its lyrics and how good they are versus how good the song is, because I'll hear the melody second. I listen to the lyrics first, because every time I hear a song, that's how I, I guess I download it that in that way and process it in my head. So I guess I'm just a rare person at that. That's what it is. But for me, it's the lyrics have always been a big thing. I know it drives Mark bonkers.
It's always the melody. You know, like I remember it was sometime late 90s, early 2000s when I realized the song Amadeus was not in English.
I don't even think I knew that.
Yeah, you know, because
is it the German?
Amadeus, but the rest of the song is not. It's like in German or something.
Yeah,
and I
yeah.
never knew, because the rhythm and the melody is all I hear, and then I get to the chorus. That's in English, but the rest of the song. Next time you listen,
you don't hear
is not in English.
Most, you're right. That's how people process it in their brains. They hear that melody. That one is so memorable that you don't hear anything else. And again, car commercial.
Yeah, there's a couple other Du Hast by that German, another German metal band. That one's not in English. And then I recently re-put 99 Red Balloons, but I think it's Luftballons on my playlist.
I was like,
I like the German version better, I think, but I like listening to the story and the lyrics also. So then
the
I
German
put the version back on there.
The German version is better.
It's a power hitting one. Yeah, you're right. That is did such a great time. Now for us, we got introduced to the English version, and then all of a sudden we heard the German version. We're like, wait a minute, this is the same song, but you're right. I think the German version is much more powerful in the fact that the lyrics just stand out more. But I do, you're right. Everyone wants to be a Captain Kirk, and I'm sorry, I have to hear that.
But we were talking about rock ballads and ballads in general. And those songs that they came out with in the 90s, the Goo Goo Dolls, epic songs. Iris, that was the big
Iris is the biggest
hit. Yeah, there's a clip of him singing that song, and I don't know what year it was, but it looks like he's at some huge festival, and it's just pouring rain.
2004, yeah. But okay, it's 2004,
and it's just so it's so perfect. It's just like
he hits every melody.
You would think that was a music video, you know what I mean? But it's real life. I will say for lyrics, anyways. I don't know if he does the lyrics or just the vocal melody, but a friend of mine, I was the studio I used to work at. The owner was in this band called Wild Party. His name's Ethan Kaufman. He's a great friend, and lead singer of the band Wild Party is named Lincoln. And he told me that's how they write their songs, that he vocalizes the vocal melody first and then they write the songs around it. So I was like, wow, that's cool. That's different than how I would approach it, but you're not the only one.
No, it's just, it comes out. I get it does individual.
Ask them if they start with the bridge.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I'm never that.
Remember,
I love it though. I'm going to try that.
So remember,
it's the only time I've tried.
I learned music, and I said this the last show, and I'll say it again. I learned music from Raindrops Are Falling on Your Head. They keep falling. Mm-hmm. And that's the song I learned to play first before I learned anything else. And ironically, that song is filled with masterful lyrics that just insanely were too good that it's memorable. And that is the it was well put together. And I think that probably warped my brain to where I'm at, because I think is what people what influenced you and originally on is probably why where you attach yourself to music. Again, music is just so much into emotion.
I'm interested to know what you are thinking the bridge is as far as its function in the song, if you're starting with it. Are you, because a lot of times the bridge can be kind of a response to the story of the verse and the chorus. How are you thinking about it? And then I'd love to know how you're thinking about it and as far as its function, and then how you're then approaching the verse and the chorus in reference to the
end of the story. I always think of it as the end of the story.
So you're writing the end of the story, and then
going backwards, just like you said. That's how I think of it. Is the ending of where I'm going, mm-hmm. and the storytelling, and then I can build the story, the rest of the story before I go back to the beginning.
Well, so, I know a lot of movie makers that work that way.
Yeah,
I was gonna say, yeah, I think that is how a lot of writers work. So makes sense.
I know I'm used up a lot of time.
You're being nice, Sean.
Yeah.
Sorry, Sean. I'm interested. It's a genuinely interesting idea. So
whatever I'm trying to write as the bridge becomes the chorus. I haven't yet been able to start from there and make that the bridge and then go back and build the rest of this. I start there, it becomes the chorus. I haven't. It's a gift. I don't have that gift.
Yeah.
I can write those in 10 minutes, get done and go back and start writing again and give it its. But I've also realized since I've been writing a lot more in the last, 6 months, since Mark's got me back to writing again, I can tell you what, I'm faltering over a lot of things over and over and over. And I've noticed that now in my lyrics, I've caught on to it. And I'm like, damn, am I doing this multiple times, not thinking about it? And I'm like, wow, I got to quit stumbling like that, because here I am. And funny enough, that if I took all those country songs, put them together, there is a whole story in every one of those songs. And but there's a lot of commonalities in each of the songs. It would make a great, the only reason why the country songs came out really well, not normally me, I don't normally write it that way, but it just seemed to happen to fall in this respect of us playing with all the stuff we've been playing with music lately. It fell that way. And then I wrote the whole one end of this whole big relationship thing in these like 9 songs. And but it's been struggling with the other ones. I struggled and I noticed when I was doing rock, I was trying to mimic a few things, so there's some things I need to shore up on that. But yeah, there is, it's interesting how bridges that I can write and sit down and write it, but then to sit and play sometimes, and because I hadn't really played live since 2000, that I struggle with that now more than I ever did. Because before, I used to be able to pick up a guitar, I could pick up a, you know, keyboard, piano, I can do whatever I need to and play it. And now I've noticed I actually have a block. So it's interesting to see that I've actually got a piano and I haven't been, or keyboard, I'm sorry, and I haven't really wanted to play with it because I've realized some of the things. I'm like, here I am. Can I really remember how I'm playing?
Yeah.
It's like, I don't understand getting on the bicycle, but
to be able to do, yeah. You know, when I go to play keys or sometimes even I go to guitar, people are like, oh, you can play. I'm like, and I used to play. And when I started, there's things that I'm like, I can't remember. And you get stuck about what you, it's like basketball. If I go out there now, I don't even play because I'm haunted by the last time I played, I did my move, crossover, drop, came, and the kid's still standing there like, oh man, you okay?
Exactly. Yeah, I'm not getting out there and play that either. It's amazing the fun things.
Remember what you used to do. Yeah.
So, Sean, it's great to see the Eiffels doing really well. And it is, again, great to be able to do something with you guys again. I would love we're coming up with so many different concert series. Somewhere along the way, I got to get you guys to come play live on one of these.
Yeah, that would be a ball. Yeah,
we've been putting a lot of them together. It would be great to see you out there because I think you guys, in my opinion, have a great live show because of the difference in the music and the way that the music is very much engages the audience, where you can go from a slower song. But like you said, you start hard at beginning, those people are going to be into it from the whole, regardless if you go to a really slow song.
Yeah, I love that idea. Definitely reach out if something comes to mind. And I think when we first started talking, you said you hadn't seen us perform live. During COVID, we did a virtual set for Troubadour in Hollywood as part of kind of a charity for live venues that were struggling at the time. So if you do want to see some live stuff, on our channel, we got live performances that were done with the Troubadour on the Eiffels YouTube channel.
Cool. And I will get all those.
I saw your video. I didn't see the live, but I'll check you guys out.
Yeah, check the live. I saw the video.
Yeah, it's going to be it's a studio. Some of them have the Troubadour tag on them. Others just say live. So yeah, check it out.
All right. I will make sure to put all your links, social media, and everything up on for where the interview's at. And again, it was great having you. You got to come back. This was good because we did talk a little more technical than probably normally we get to go do it. So it's good talking. So thanks for the good conversation. And we'll see you next time on Thrip.
And maybe soon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thanks, Tom. Thanks, Marcus. It was a pleasure. It was a fun conversation.
Oh, man. Always a pleasure.